Hello, everyone, and welcome back to our study of the life of David. Today we are in lesson two, entitling this The Shepherd Years. We're going to 1 Samuel chapter 16, and we're going to be looking at how David enters the scene and draw some lessons from the first time we see David here. 1 Samuel 16 opens, and we see Samuel the judge following God's orders to travel to Bethlehem and anoint one of Jesse's sons as the king-elect in place of Saul. Now remember that Saul was chosen as a king because of the people's demand. The people wanted a king, and they demanded of Samuel and God, give us a king. Give us a king that we may be like the nations around us. And so Saul was chosen as a way of giving them exactly what they wanted. They wanted a king like the nations around them, so Saul proves himself to be a king just like the kings and the nations around them. You know, at appearance sake, looks like a king. He is tall, he is handsome, seems to be pretty strong. I mean, he looks physically like a leader, but it's not long until his inward deficiencies just begin to manifest themselves. Just his immaturity. He's very thin-skinned, he's hot-tempered, he doesn't respect Samuel's authority as a high priest. He's going to just offer an offering even though it wasn't his offer, broke God's commandment. Now, he's very selfish, his selfishness turned into egotism. He's offering or having the people build up statues to him. He's blaming the people, excuse me, for his own mistakes. Simply put, Saul was not a man after God's own heart. He wasn't. He did not trust and obey the Lord. 1 Samuel 13, if we go back a couple chapters, in 1 Samuel 13 and verse 13, Samuel said to Saul, "You have acted foolishly, and you have not kept the commandment of the Lord your God, which he commanded you. For now the Lord would have established your kingdom over Israel forever. But now your kingdom will not endure." Verse 14, "The Lord has sought out for himself a man after his own heart, and the Lord has appointed him as ruler over his people, because you have not kept what the Lord commanded you." You also see down in 1 Samuel chapter 15. So one, Samuel says to Saul, you didn't obey. You didn't obey what the Lord asked of you. He would have given you your kingdom forever had you just trusted and obeyed the Lord, but you didn't. You didn't trust God. You didn't even obey God. And so God's going to look for someone with a heart after his own. A man with after God's own heart, which is a way of saying, Saul, you're not, your heart isn't after God's. You're very different from God. You see also in 1 Samuel chapter 15, notice what Samuel says to Saul in verse 26. Samuel says to Saul, "I will not return with you, for you have rejected the word of the Lord. The Lord has rejected you from being king over Israel." And as Samuel turned to go, Saul seized the edge of the robe and it tore. So Samuel said to him, "The Lord has torn the kingdom of Israel from you today and has given it to your neighbor who is better than you." So what we know about this next king is that he's a man after God's own heart and he's better than Saul. It's hard that you can be worse. Hard to be worse. Saul completely disobeyed God. The wheels on his mental wagon seem to be falling off. And so God sends Samuel to appoint this next king, this better man after God's own heart, as replacement. And so he travels through this town. We're in 1 Samuel 16. Samuel travels through the town of Bethlehem, the small town, and he sends for Jesse and his sons, and they wait for God to indicate who the king will be. The selection of this king was not by accident. It was all by God's appointment. You see in verse 1, "I will send you to Jesse of the Bethlehemite, for I have selected a king among myself for of his sons." I have selected. God already knew who it was. You see in verse 3, "You shall invite Jesse to the sacrifice, and I will show you what you shall do, and you shall anoint for me the one whom I designate." God is already choosing it. It's not Samuel's choice, it's God's choice. So, kind of see the scene. Jesse shows up, he's got his sons, and one by one, the sons of Jesse pass before the prophet, and one by one, they are rejected. It's down in verse 8 to 10. One by one, none of them are the ones that God has chosen. You have Abinadab, and the Lord has not chosen him. Then Shammah, and the Lord has not chosen this one. And on and on and on. God's not choosing any of these sons. Now, there's a point here that we need to make sure we catch. The obvious choice to Samuel wasn't God's choice, because God saw differently. That's verse 7, one of the most memorable verses from this whole section here. The Lord said to Samuel, "Do not look at his appearance or the height of his stature, because I have rejected him. For God sees not as man sees. For man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart." He's talking about Eliab, the very firstborn. Maybe he's big, maybe he's strong. Maybe it's just the idea that he's the oldest, has more experience. It's not Eliab, it's not Abinadab, it's not Shammah. It's not these older sons. God's not looking at it the way that man is. That's Saul. Saul was exactly what you would expect. He looked like it. But what the people could not see, and what God knew about Saul, was that he was inwardly weak. He was inwardly selfish. He was inwardly, his heart that was not at all like God's. And so God is looking at something different. He's looking at the inward. He's looking at the heart. See, you might think that God is looking for the most talented and the most gifted to do his work, but that's wrong. Think of 1 Corinthians chapter 1. It's not the mighty. It's not the strength. It's not the wise. God didn't call the wise. No. Well, while man focuses on the externals, the surface quality, big brains and bucks, God looks for something else. God searches the heart. What Samuel did not see was the character of Eliab, who would in time be critical of his younger brother, and he would look down on the young shepherd. So Samuel was enamored with the externals, just like sometimes we tend to be. Well, there's one son who's not here. It's not present at this scene. David was with the sheep, verse 11 and 12. David is with the sheep and he's doing his job. He was the shepherd. He cared for the flocks. David, in fact, wasn't even really considered when Jesse brought his sons to be meeting with Samuel. From his father's eyes, he was the youngest who cared for the sheep. I'm sure in his father's eyes, there's no possible way it could be David. He's described as ruddy, red hair, or tan skinned, and handsome, pleasing appearance in verse 12. And so, like Saul, he's given descriptions about his appearance, but it's in stark contrast. Because you notice the description of David found in verse 18. He's a skillful musician, a mighty man of valor, a warrior, prudent in speech, handsome. The Lord is with him. The Lord is with him. So imagine this scene. Just imagine it all playing out. So here's Jesse. He's got all these sons. And they all come in. And one after another, it's not him. It's not the one. So finally, Samuel has to ask Jesse, do you have any other sons? So they call in David. In comes this teenager, maybe 16 or 17. And he still smells like a sheep. All of a sudden, this old prophet hobbles over and he pours oil on his head. And it drips down his hair, drops on his neck. And Samuel, the aged, whispers in his ear the meaning of this symbol. And he says, "You will be the next king." This is the man that God chose. This is the king that God selected for his people. This is the one who is better than Saul. This is the one who is a man after God's own heart. When David appears, he appears as nothing more than a young, forgotten nobody. Just a shepherd. Merely a shepherd. See, shepherding was not something that was really positive at this time. You know, we've sort of glamorized the idea of shepherding because of where we are, because of this side of the cross and what we know about famous shepherds in the Bible. But at that time, shepherding was not this ideal occupation. His father forgot about him. And you notice in chapter 17 of 1 Samuel, notice how his brother speaks about him in verse 28. Verse 28, the oldest son, Eliab, it says his oldest brother heard when he spoke to the men, and Eliab's anger burned against David. And he said, "Why have you come down? And with whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know your insolence and the wickedness of your heart, for you have come down in order to see the battle." Not only does he speak so condescending towards his younger brother. Well, think about this. David is a shepherd. Some of you, if you're like me, haven't really grown up around that occupation of farming and tending for animals. What would the job description of a shepherd be like? What's David doing these days? Well, shepherding is, it's not a 9-to-5 job. You stayed with the sheep. And so where the sheep are, you are. You'll find the shepherd. That meant staying out in the fields at night. That meant finding your own food, bathing in the creeks, hot days and cool nights, bugs, dirt, a lot of walking, and there's no thanks. There's no applause at the end of the day. Sheep don't give you a high five for a good day's work. No, it's a thankless and lonely occupation. And it's one that's usually reserved for the youngest in the family. And yet, Psalm 70, so Psalm 78, verses 70 and 71 reads, "From the care of ewes and suckling lambs, he brought him," as David, "to shepherd Jacob, his people, and Israel. So he shepherded them according to the integrity of his heart and guided them with skillful hands." It was from his time as a shepherd in the hills of Judea that David developed a heart of a leader. And we think of this. What qualities, what leadership skills did David develop during his season as a shepherd? Well, one, he learned to care for those who couldn't care for himself. He learned to care for those who can't care for themselves because sheep are not like cats that can lick themselves or dogs that can protect themselves. They need constantly to be watched over. They need care, they need attention, they need direction. F.E. Meyer expressed it this way. He says, as the morning hours sped onwards, many duties would engross his watchful soul, strengthening the weak, healing that which was sick, binding up that which was broken, and seeing that which was lost, or the music of his song must have been filled with the listening air. That's a lot, paying attention to those, making sure they don't wander, making sure they don't get hurt, making sure that there's no predator coming after them. And so he learned to care for those who cannot care for themselves. He also developed during this time a great love and devotion for the Lord, because it's during the season of his life that David will write many of the Psalms. You think of Psalm 23, "The Lord is my shepherd." And you think of Psalm 8, "When I consider the heavens, all that thy hand has made, what is man that you are mindful of him?" I think of Psalm 19, "The heavens declare the glory of God." Perhaps David, as he's out there with the sheep, just day gazing around. I was going to say daydreaming, but gazing around at creation around him and allowing his mind to meditate on God and on creation. David used this time alone in the fields to think and to reflect upon God and on God's words and to draw closer to him. This occupation also taught David an important trait, and that is the heart of humility. Psalm 89 and verse 19 and 20 calls David my servant. David then grew up in a famous family, in a rich home. No, he grew up in obscurity. He grew up out of the countryside doing the work of the servants, doing the work that servants of rich people did. He had the heart of a servant. But you also see within here, not only was he humble, he also had the heart of integrity. Integrity is doing the right thing even when no one's looking. Integrity is who you are when no one's looking. It's the deep bone honesty. He wasn't just faithful. David wasn't just faithful when others were watching, when his brothers came to check him on him, when his father came to for a status report. No, he was faithful, honest, loyal, and true when he was all alone, when he was all by himself, just he and the sheep. That's the idea. He was trustworthy. He could be trusted to care for the sheep, to handle this responsibility laid on his shoulders. And he took this role seriously. I mean, think about the contrast. Think about the contrast. Keep your finger here in 1 Samuel 17. You think about John 10 when Jesus talks about himself as the good shepherd. And Jesus here talking about shepherding. In John chapter 10, I want you to read with me verses 12 and 13. John 10, verses 12 and 13. Jesus says that he who is a hired hand and is not a shepherd, who is not the owner of the sheep, he sees the wolf coming and he leaves the sheep and flees. And the wolf snatches them and scatters them. He flees because He is a hired hand and is not concerned about the sheep. Yeah. That's someone who says, well, they're not mine. I'm not putting my life on the line. They're not my sheep. I'm not going to put myself at risk. Now you compare that with David. David, who will say to Saul in 1 Samuel 17, verse 34. 1 Samuel 17 and verse 34. Actually, here he's speaking to Goliath. Oh, I'm sorry, this is Saul. This is David speaking to Saul in verse 34. David said to Saul, your servant was tending his father's sheep when a lion or a bear came and took a lamb from the flock. I went out after him and attacked him and rescued it from his mouth. And when he rose up against me, I seized him by his beard and struck him and killed him. He's willing to put himself in harm's way to defend the sheep that belong to his father. He was trustworthy to care for these animals, to put their best interest before his own. There's a lesson there for us. It's the small things where we prove ourselves. You know, before God entrusted his people to David, he wanted to see how he did with sheep. His faithfulness in little things proved that he was capable of big things. That the small, ordinary, everyday tasks are where we prove our faithfulness, our ability to handle the heavier, bigger, weightier responsibilities of life. You know, Jesus said in Luke 16, verse 10, he who is faithful with little will be faithful with much. The reality there. And so here's David, a young man watching sheep. And instead of just wishing his life away, daydreaming, hating what he was doing, becoming bitter and sour, he became something. He used the season of life. There in the fields of Judea, he developed the heart after God's own. Because it was while he was there in the fields of Judea as a young man, as a shepherd, that he is called in 1 Samuel 13, verse 14, the man after God's own heart. It wasn't later, he was called that there. Now here's the thing, all of us have times in our life that we might call the shepherd years. It may be the school years. It may be the job that I don't like. Maybe I'm placing a responsibility to care for someone that's maybe adding burdens upon my life. But just as God noticed David in the fields, God notices you and your heart where you are today. And so use whatever season of life you're in to develop a heart that belongs to God. You know, it could be a season of life where you can serve others. You can write hymns. You can memorize verses. You can be more active in the church. You can teach the lost. What are you doing to serve the purpose of God in this season of your life? You know, the shepherd years of our life are the undesirable times. I wish I were somewhere else. But rather than wishing your life away, look at David. He used the time. He developed that time to develop his heart. Now, how chapter 16 ends, 1 Samuel 16, when you get to the end of the chapter. In contrast to David, we have King Saul. So in contrast to David, who in verse 13 received the Spirit of the Lord departs from Saul, and an evil spirit began to terrorize him in verse 14. Whether if this was just fits of depression or paranoia, or if he was being plagued by a demon, either way, Saul's being troubled. His servants suggest bringing in a skilled musician to help soothe Saul. And David is suggested. Bring in David, verse 18. It tells us about the reputation this young man had. But as they call for David, right, as they suggest David, where is he? Where is this newly appointed king of Israel? Now, verse 19. He's with the flock. What's that tell you about David? What's it tell you about the heart of this young man who was doing the right thing? Appointed a king one day. What'd he do the next? He goes back to the fields and he does his job, taking care of the sheep. God knew what he was doing when he chose David. What a leader. What a hard worker. What a selfless, humble, amazing heart of integrity. Well, so David comes to Saul, and Saul in verse 21 knows what it says. The people I'm sorry, this is 1 Samuel 16, verse 21. David came to Saul and attended to him, and Saul, notice, loved him greatly, and he became his armor bearer. And there's a verse you need to remember for the next couple classes. Remember verse 21 here. Saul loved him greatly. That's going to change. It's going to change really soon. Initially, Saul loved him. Who didn't? Everyone loved David. David had a disposition and a heart that was just likable, contagious. And so Saul makes him his armor bearer. That doesn't mean a warrior's right hand who has always fought at his master's side. I mean, Joab had 10 armor bearers in 2 Samuel 18 and verse 15. You know, all the term really means here is that David was one of Saul's assistants. That's what it means. And so David comes and he stands in the presence of Saul and would play the harp to soothe and refresh him when he became plagued with the evil spirit, verse 23. And so here, without Saul knowing, standing in his presence is his successor. David knew, but he never said it. He never mentioned it because he came for one purpose right now. He came to minister Saul and his oppression. He came to serve and minister to the Lord's appointed. What does that tell you about David? What does that tell you about the heart of David here? And there's a lot of amazing and incredible things found about the heart of this young servant David. There's a reason that it's not older in his life. Even right here as a young man and a shepherd, God is able to call him a man after his own heart. You look at what he did during this season. You look at the songs he wrote. You look at the things that he put his mind upon, the things that he focused on. You look at the way that he handled what some people would say is just beneath them, caring for animals, and how he handled that responsibility and took it seriously, putting his life on the line. And you see how God rewarded him. You see how he is seen by others, how he is entrusted with such responsibility. And then you see the heart of this humble young man who doesn't just snatch from Saul what's already given to him. No, he waits for his time and he keeps doing what is right before God and others. David really was a man after God's own heart. And we can be too. We can be men and women after God's own heart too. And I think I'll end on this point. Though David is great, and through the study we are admiring the admirable qualities of David. We're admiring these great and noble qualities of David and seeing what we can emulate in our own lives. But don't forget that someone greater than David has come. David was a man after God's own heart, but he wasn't perfect. He wasn't God himself. And so something greater than David has come. Someone greater than David has come. And that's Jesus. While David points us in the right direction, he reminds us of the true standard, of the real ideal, of the real King of Kings, the real good shepherd, and that's Jesus. Thank you so much for studying with me today. I hope the study has been encouraging and a blessing to you. Let's go out and let's use these shepherd years of ours to strengthen our hearts, to develop ourselves, to shape our lives, to develop integrity, to worship God and to draw closer to him than ever before. Don't waste away these years of your life if you're in a season that is unpleasant. Use it, grow, and walk closer to God. Even here in this season, we can be called men and women after God's own heart. Thank you so much. I hope you have a wonderful day, and I look forward to you coming back and studying together as we go through this incredible study of the life of David. Have a blessed day. We'll see you soon.